720 WGN. It's Andrea Darlis. I'm with you until 10 o'clock, and then Patty Vasquez will take over the reins here at 10 o'clock as well. Huge thanks to John Hansen, Jeremy Gorner, and Maze Jackson for being on our reporter panel tonight. We had a great time with them. We switch now to the other side of the bar, if you will. I was calling this the trial of the century only because I think it is. It's the trial of Hippocrates, a mock trial sponsored by the National Hellenic Museum. It's the sixth time we've done this, and I can say we because I've moderated this event for several years. I was a juror, but I graduated to moderator, thanks to Helene. But I want to introduce you to everybody involved with the National Hellenic Museum's sixth annual trial series event. This is the Trial of Hippocrates. So we got a big room full of people here. You're about to hear some of the biggest names in Chicago in law and with regard to the Hellenic Museum as well. So Dr. Laura, why don't we start with you, and then we'll go around and everybody will introduce themselves, and then we'll talk about your roles in this trial, which is not to be missed. It's open to the public. Tickets are on sale. If you want to see a really cool, fun event, I promise you this will not disappoint. So let's go ahead and begin.
Well, I'm Dr. Laura Kalamos. I'm the president at the National Hellenic Museum. This is by far my favorite thing to do throughout the year. You know, part of what we do as a museum is educate people, but to take history and add a little bit of legal debate and put it on stage, we don't know what's going to happen, but you're going to come out feeling smarter and understanding a little bit about Greek history and a lot about debate.
It combines a little bit of everything, Greek mythology, Greek history in general, and then, of course, the law.
Yeah.
With some of the top names in Chicago.
Well, and so much of American jurisprudence comes to us from ancient Greece. So some part of that is learning about jury trials and understanding how legal and adversarial debate happens. And the audience gets to vote. So you're not just watching this trial on stage. At some point, you have to make up your own mind. So how good are the arguments? Because you will be voting like you might have as a citizen
you
in Athens.
You get to participate. That's my favorite part. And we all know the Greeks invented democracy. So we can safely say that. Christina, let's move on to you.
Hi, I'm Christina Fakeless Adair. I will be examining Dr. Peter Angelos. I'm a neutral party, so what I do is help get as many facts as I can out of the expert witness, so each side can then use those facts for their presentations and their arguments. This is my sixth year as well. Judge Kokoris is the person that helped me get involved with this. I'm definitely the youngest member, but I'm honored to be always part of the trial series.
You had worked with Judge Kokoris, correct?
I had. So has Tinos. I think we both say that he's the best boss in the entire world.
Oh, absolutely. And the sweetest, too. I'm sure others on the other side of the bar might not completely see that, but what a fair and wonderful man. I'm glad he's back as well. Okay, the Tinos that you referenced is Tinos Diamantatos, who's sitting to your right, my left. Tinos,
good evening.
Tell everybody who you are and who you are representing this year.
Good evening. Good evening, Andrea. Thanks for having us. My name is Tinos Diamantatos. So I have the privilege of representing the good people of Athens, and we have brought Dr. Hippocrates to trial this year, and we, along with my trial partner, Patrick Collins, are going to be bringing Mr. Hippocrates to trial in light of certain decisions that he made with regard to the King of Thebes in the final few days of the King of Thebes' life, and some decisions that we feel were improper, and we're going to let the jury decide whether or not they agree with us.
And sitting at the other table across from you is no stranger to Chicago media and the law in Chicago, Mr. Bob Clifford.
Good evening. Thank you for having us.
Thank you for being here.
You know, it's exciting to participate in these trials. This is my sixth, and once again, I'm representing the innocent injured physician who's being wrongfully accused of causing the death of the king. You know, it's a sad event, of course, when the world loses a king, but that occurred through no fault of Dr. Hippocrates. As a matter of fact, what the good doctor did was try to accommodate the king's wishes to be healed. He promised the king that he would give his best efforts, which he did, but he warned him that, king, this may not work. And now what happened is the king, being as grateful as he was, gave Dr. Hippocrates Socrates a much-deserved reward for his good efforts, and the king's son has come along, and he wants that treasure trove back, and that's what this is all about. It's the greed of a young fellow who was born on third base and thinks he hit a triple.
I love it. I absolutely love it. And sitting on the bench this year, again, is Judge Anna Demakopoulos. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Andrea. And here we go, Bob Clifford trying to taint that jury pool once again.
I was just going to say, now, you are going to be one of the judges, you and Judge Kokoris, and we have some other very esteemed judges on our panel this year.
So joining Judge Kokoris and myself will be Judge Sharon Johnson Coleman, also from the Federal District Court here in Chicago, and Justice Bauer from the Seventh Circuit, a Court of Appeals here in Chicago. And I think that one of the things that we all enjoy from the bench, of course, we see some of the lawyers every day, but we get to also observe how the reaction from the audience, and we get to appreciate, and the audience gets to appreciate the great lawyering skills that we see every day. These trials are quite unique because what we see is the interaction between humanity, ethical dilemmas that we have, and it doesn't change. It didn't change from ancient Greece until today. Doctors are still having these ethical dilemmas, and I think the facts in this particular case are going to bear out that the Hippocratic Oath is what Dr. Hippocrates is going to be charged with violating. And so I think the facts that Christina might be bringing out from the doctor that's going to be our expert in this case is going to raise some factual distinctions and some ethical distinctions that the audience is really going to have to evaluate for themselves.
I would highly encourage everybody listening, or if you have not been, to absolutely go. You bring up a very good point, Judge. You get to see you in action, a judge, and famous attorneys that we talk about in the news and different cases that you cover. We get to see you in action. And it's very rare that anybody will maybe see the inside of a courtroom except for what you see on television. So it's very neat to see all of you in action. Do you have a little bit of fun? Because you do sometimes either oppose each other or you'll have judgments that you'll have to render against the attorneys. Is it kind of fun to be in a setting where it is a little bit lighthearted?
It's a lot of fun.
No question about it. Yeah. And one of the real rewarding experiences of this is, you know, our community is blessed with a rich heritage and with the Greek community that we have. It's the museum is just a place of wonder to see. And this event benefits the museum in ways that makes it available to people in the community to come and study the heritage that has grown up around them and that has been the anchor of our democracy in America.
It's quite an undertaking. It is, Laura. This is the sixth annual that we've had. I've so enjoyed being a juror at first and then moderating it and kind of stepping back and watching everybody take part in this. But the undertaking is massive, is it not?
Well, absolutely. Herding this many attorneys on stage is one part of it. But we spend all year looking at the history, finding a case that's interesting. This is unscripted. So we don't have all of this written. We don't know what's going to happen. I don't know how they're going to argue the case. Our resident historian, Dr. Katie Kalaitis, researched something that we thought could really add some rich history. It's been hotly debated for thousands of years, mm-hmm. and now here again, we're going to bring to light a case that could go any way.
Now, Tinos and Bob, you were on the same side last year. It was the trial of the Parthenon marbles, which was extremely interesting. Being Greek, I didn't even know the whole story about the Parthenon marbles. You were on the opposite. You were on the same side, and this year, you're opposite.
Tinos is prosecuting. I'm defending.
Yes.
And you know, that's one of the fun things and the fortunate things about being a trial lawyer is that good trial lawyers are anchored in the idea that what they're doing is not about them. It's about the people they represent. And if Tinos had to prosecute a case, he can do it. If he had to defend a case, he could do it because he's devoted to the client and what he's doing is on behalf of that client. And it's almost like you separate yourself from what you have to do in order to either defend, in my case, the doctor, or in his case, the state, to prosecute the will of the state. And it's, you know, that's one of the valuable parts of what we're doing by displaying the advocacy skills of all these lawyers. Take a Pat Fitzgerald, Patrick Collins. These are, you know, trial lawyers extraordinaire who ran the U.S. Attorney's Office here in Chicago, which is one of the nation's finest. They're seeing some of the best lawyers at doing their good work.
Right, and we wanted to say Patrick Collins was supposed to be here tonight as well. He had a flight delay. He is not going to be with
us
tonight.
We gave him the wrong time.
Oh, did you? I already had a flight delay. All right, here we go. Judge?
I'm not going to comment.
She's not
going
to comment on that. Right, we're talking to all the participants of the Trial of Hippocrates. It's all brought to you by the National Hellenic Museum. It's next Wednesday, February 20th from 6:30 until 9 p.m. at the Harris Theater for Music and Dance, 205 East Randolph Drive. We'll continue with our panel here and maybe find out a little bit about what Bob and Tinos have in their arsenal or what we have planned, and maybe if the judge is going to give any sort of an idea on how she'll rule. It's all coming up next on 720 WGN. You're looking for something to do next Wednesday, February 20th. You do not want to miss the 6th Annual National Hellenic Museum's Trial Series event. It's the Trial of Hippocrates. It's a mock trial. It is so much fun to see how to see all of these lawyers and the judges in action. If you've never seen anything, you've never seen anything like it. So I highly encourage everybody to go. And we're very fortunate to have in our studio some of the biggest names in law in Chicago. Bob Clifford, Judge Anna Demakopoulos, Christina Fakelis, Tinos Diamantatos, and Dr. Laura Calamus from the Hellenic Museum. What a wonderful undertaking, as we were saying, Dr. Laura. And this year, Christina was telling me a little bit, the topic is different every year. This one obviously centers around Hippocrates, because
Hippocrates.
It's just Hippocrates.
The father of
medicine.
He doesn't have, like, it's not Bob Hippocrates.
No, he's just one of those one-name wonders, right?
Okay.
He's
the, like Oprah,
exactly.
Hippocrates,
yeah.
Socrates.
He historically is associated with some of the most important texts in medicine that have helped us to understand scientific inquiry and how diagnosis and prognosis informed medical practice, and going all the way back to ancient Greece.
And this one, and every year it's a different. It's a different defendant. It's a different theme. And Christina, you were saying a little bit, this is a very relatable topic, especially in this day and age.
Right. What I think is interesting and applicable to everyone is that we all may have, unfortunately, end of life type decisions to make, whether for ourselves or for our family. And this, the attorneys will definitely touch on that during their arguments, and Dr. Angelos as well, in terms of how the Hippocratic Oath affects those end of life decisions.
And during the trial, what's going to happen is the lawyers, and we're going to get into it a little bit too after the news with Tinos and Bob about not giving away all their secrets and all what they have in their arsenal, but a little bit about what their strategy might be as they proceed with the Trial of Hippocrates. But again, the undertaking is just massive, getting everybody in the room. How do you come up with the topics? Do you have a group?
There's just a few of us every year who spend the summer looking at old texts and historical parables to see what we might be able to turn into a trial. Our hope this year was to find something medical as well as legal, because that's of interest. I'm actually a practicing nurse myself, and this year we will have continuing legal education available for lawyers and continuing nursing education available for nurses. So it's a great opportunity to learn about your practice, learn about ethics and how it applies, not just in the ancient world, but in modern life, how decision-making is impacted by real-life experiences. So here is a king on his deathbed begging for care, and a doctor trying to decide, how much do I need to treat this person? Is it over-treatment? I don't know. The attorneys will have to argue that case.
And that's what we're going to find out as well. More after this on 720 WGN.
Never was a leader. Never had a thing for fairy tales.
We are talking with the participants of the National Hellenic Museum's Trial of the Century. I'm calling it the Trial. Well, I'm calling it the Trial of the Century. It's the Trial of Hippocrates, the sixth annual of this wonderful series, a mock trial. We want to give you a little bit of background about if you attend, which you should attend. We'll tell you how to get tickets as well. What you're going to be hearing and what you're going to be seeing, during this year's mock trial. Bob Clifford is with me in studio, as is Judge Anna Demikopoulos, Christina Fakeless, Tinos Diamantatos, and Dr. Laura Calamus from the Hellenic Museum, who put all of this together. So, Judge, tell us a little bit about what we can expect to see and what the charges against Hippocrates.
So we've all heard about the Hippocratic Oath, and Dr. Hippocrates is going to be on trial for violating an ethical standard. So it's a civil case, and the Hippocratic Oath that he is charged, it's his own oath that he has created, and the oath is that he will help the sick, but never with a view to injure and wrongdoing. And so what we're going to be hearing or listening for are the facts and whether or not he violated his own oath. So I'm sure that Tinos mm-hmm. will have a perspective that he did, in fact, violate his oath.
Tinos, you are prosecuting Hippocrates.
Right. That's right. And what we're going to ask the jury to do, and we encourage people to come and participate in this process, is putting aside the name that we all know today, Hippocrates, and how history has treated Hippocrates. We're going to go back in time, and we're going to look at this issue and see the decisions that Hippocrates, as a medical professional, made. And as the good judge said, there's an oath. He's expected to follow it. It's a good oath. And here, this trial is going to raise some significant issues. For example, just because you're rich, just because you're king of Thebes, just because you promise certain riches to a doctor, whether it's Hippocrates or somebody fresh out of medical school, that shouldn't sway your professional judgment. And I think those are the issues that we're going to focus on. In this case, Hippocrates made a series of bad decisions, and because of that, he's being brought to trial next week, and we're going to ask the jury to find him liable for his conduct.
Okay, and Bob Clifford, you are defending Hippocrates.
You know, every healthcare provider wakes up in the morning just like all of us. They put their pants on one leg at a time, and not a single one of them wakes up and says, you know, I'm going to go do harm today. They go to the hospitals, they go to their offices and clinics intending to do good deeds and good things for people. And Hippocrates, the father of medicine, terms that we all embrace every day about whether something is chronic, whether something's anemic, whether it's an epidemic, these are the words that this man anchored. And the facts are very clear. You know, one of the things that Tinos kind of conveniently forgets, he has the mm-hmm. burden of proof to show that Dr. Hippocrates did wrong here. And that's just not the evidence. The evidence is clear that when Hippocrates went to the king, he told the king, you have these problems. They cannot be solved. I can soothe you. I can try to give you comfort. I can try to make your life easier. And as Christina was, and that's one of the beauties of these trials, as Christina said early on, there's really comparisons between what occurred back in, you know, what, 370 B.C.
Yeah, ancient
and,
Greece, right?
And what is occurring today with our elderly parents. There isn't a person within the sound of my voice who hasn't had an experience with a relative who they're at their dying days. And how far will you go to try to save them, give them comfort? But you have to be intellectually honest with them, as the good doctor was, and said, King, I can help you out here. I can soothe some of your pain, but this stuff isn't going away.
Well, Mr. Clifford's a skilled advocate. I'm still trying to wrap my head around the famous, world-famous trial lawyer that Bob Clifford is actually defending a doctor's conduct here in this case. But as Bob said, the facts are going to be critical next week, and what Hippocrates told the king of Thebes, how the king of Thebes responded to that, those facts, that interchange is going to be central to the issue that the jury is expected to return a verdict on next week. And I think that the prosecution and the plaintiffs here will most certainly meet their burden of proof. Because, frankly, Hippocrates fell down on this one. He accepted a series of riches from the king, which he should not have done. He didn't tell him the ins and outs of what was going on. He accepted things of value that he shouldn't have. And because of those bad decisions, he put the king in a worse off place than he was, and he violated his oath.
And what is nice about Dr. Angelos, the medical ethics expert that's going to speak.
Who you're going to be interviewing.
Correct. Yeah. So I'm going to be asking him questions on behalf of the prosecution and the defense to see, you know, his take on this story. But, you know, he's an expert in medical ethics today. And so that will be incorporated as well, which hopefully will give the audience maybe a little bit more guidance or a few more answers to their questions that they may have about this topic.
Now, Judge, you're a fair woman, obviously, on the bench for many years. How do you sit here and listen to some of the arguments and not start to form an opinion before the actual trial begins? How do you put all your preconceived notions and your predispositions all in the past and just wipe the slate clean and start fresh?
Well, that's what we're supposed to do as judges, and we've all taken our oaths that that's what we're going to do. We're going to make our decision based on the facts that we hear and the evidence that we hear and follow the law that we are given. So what's kind of nice about this particular trial is that most people will only experience a courtroom when something has gone tragically wrong in their own lives, and they don't have to think about what has happened in their own lives until the tragedy happens, and then they have to make these decisions. So what's kind of nice about the National Hellenic Museum trial series is that you can go watch this trial series. In this particular case, it's a medical ethical issues. All of us have had to deal with these issues in our lives. You will get, the audience will get to participate, and they will get to start to go through the thought process of what it actually entails to go through this. What did Hippocrates have to go through?
Mm-hmm.
So what's nice about this, they're not going to be in the tragedy. They're going to watch the tragedy.
Yes. But they can relate to the tragedy,
right?
Because
yes.
One of the things here, I said it earlier on, in jest, that the king, the new king, what he really is all about here, he lost his father, and all of the emotion that goes with that. And he accused Hippocrates of being a thief, but not a thief of the riches, as the prosecution would like to claim. They claim that he stole his last days. Well, those weren't ever Hippocrates to give. What they were for Hippocrates to try to bring him comfort during those last days, and that's why these guys cannot sustain their burden of proof.
Mm-hmm. And there goes Bob Clifford again.
I was going to say, Tinos, prosecution
sure.
always gets the last word.
Sure. So I will respectfully suggest that there's an answer for that. I'm going to ask folks to buy a ticket and go next week, support the museum. And you know, to be frank, it is really, and I'm saying this aside from having the privilege of participating, myself excluded, you will really get to see some world-class lawyering, the judges. It's a terrific trial series. As a proud Greek-American and also somebody who has the benefit of being an attorney here in Chicago, it's really a terrific, terrific program that the museum puts on, and I think there'll be a great response to Mr. Clifford's point that he just raised. Stay tuned for next week, Wednesday, and come see what it is.
I think it's wonderful that this is it's a yearly event, and I said to Judge Chiampas one year, I said, every student should have to go to bond court, at least for just a few hours. But I would change that. I would say every student, whether you're law, political science, history, journalism, English, whatever it might be, just spend a day in a courtroom and just watch the process or watch a trial, because it's nothing like you see on TV, and you can attest to this too. And to be in a room, and I'm not just saying this, to be in this room with you now and in a room with all of these big names and high-powered attorneys and judges in Chicago that we see on TV or read about in the news, to see you at work is really a joy. And all working together, even in jest, as it might be.
And I think that demonstrates a commitment that we all have to the process and to education, right?
That's important.
It's very important. Most of us teach trial advocacy. Some of us are, you know, adjunct professors. We're so committed to education that this is just another level that the museum offers as well.
It's that and more, because I'm always amazed by the lessons that are learned, the takeaways from these trials, that if you go back in time to what the Greeks were doing and talking about back then and compare them to modern society, the intellectual vitality of what the Greek community and society was doing back so long ago is still very upfront and relevant today.
It
and
is.
That's one of the best takeaways from all of these exercises.
Right.
Well, and I'd have to add, from the National Hellenic Museum's point of view, we've been doing trials as field trips for children for years.
Mm-hmm.
This is an extension for adults to enjoy, but middle schoolers can come any day of the week. Their teachers can choose one of the trials as a field trip, maybe not Hippocrates, but we do put Hercules and his labors on trial in the field trip, and the children learn about civics, about law, about democracy, about voting, good citizenship, and they have a lot of fun doing it. They learn how to argue the case, whether or not he should have killed the Nemean lion or not. So this is an extension of the kind of field trips and tours and educational outreach that the National Hellenic Museum does every day.
And we are going to tell you how to get tickets and what you have to do to go about doing that, and encourage everybody to next Wednesday, February 20th, to check out the Trial of Hippocrates from 6:30 until 9 at the Harris Theater for music and dance. It's at 205 East Randolph. We'll have much more coming up after this on 720 WGN. We are talking about the Trial of Hippocrates, sponsored by the National Hellenic Museum, with Bob Clifford, Judge Anna Demakopoulos, Christina Fakelis, Tinos Diamantatos, and Dr. Laura Kalamis from the Hellenic Museum, all participating in this wonderful trial. And I wanted to ask each of you, before we go, we have about 10 more minutes to wrap up and tell people how they can get tickets. But Tinos, you've participated for 3 years, correct? How many verdicts have you won?
So the first time I was privileged to participate was the trial of the Parthenon marbles. Things did not go well. We represented the British Museum. I worked with my former colleagues, Pat and Pat. And
Collins and Fitzgerald.
Collins,
yeah.
And Fitzgerald. Yes. And the jury did not go in our favor, so that's 0-1. And then last year I got to be trial partners with Bob Clifford. We fought valiantly to represent Megacles. The facts were a little bit stacked against us, mm-hmm. and unfortunately Megacles was indeed convicted, as he was in history.
Okay.
So 0-2. So we're going to turn things around next week.
Yep, you're going to turn it around.
We're going to turn things around next week.
I feel as though you are. Bob, you've participated in 5 or 6 of these?
I've done them all.
You've done them all, that's right.
And what is your...
I object. That's inaccurate.
I just have a mental block about losses. Listen, show me a lawyer who claims that he's never lost
there
a case,
you go.
And I'll show you a lawyer who doesn't try that.
There you go.
Okay. However, I think I'm batting a little north of 500 at the moment.
Okay, so you're doing okay. And Judge, do you remember how many guilties and not guilty verdicts you've rendered?
I don't remember how many guilty or not guilty verdicts I've rendered, but I have participated in 4 out of the 6.
And last year was the Parthenon marbles.
No, last year was Megacles.
Oh, last year was Megacles. The year before was Parthenon marbles.
Yeah. So last year I think I did find him guilty. I did return the marbles to the museum.
I did
convict Socrates the first year, which was...
That did not sit well with your family, did it?
No, and some of my countrymen...
Yeah, but we spared him the hemlock.
I did spare him.
Christmas was very difficult at the judge's house that year. And Christina, you've been in how many of these now? You were a bailiff 1 year.
Right. So I was fortunate enough, Judge Kokoris, I was his extern when all of this started with the museum 6 years ago. So I've been helping out since day one. I was a bailiff for a long time when I was in law school. And that's where I wanted to plug. If you're a parent and you think your child might be interested in the law, this is a great opportunity on a Wednesday night. Maybe it's a school night, but for them to come and see the greatest of Chicago, show their skills, and that might be something that will propel them into a legal career, which I highly recommend. But ever since then, last year I put on the expert witness neutral party, so I can
say
you're
that neutral. Okay, neutral. So you truly don't vote, do you?
I don't vote, and
you don't try and stick a little chip in there. There's the blue and the white chips. You don't try and
no, but maybe
vote?
This year I will. And this year I'm also neutral, so I will be putting on Dr. Angelos.
Okay, very good.
And I think what's important too, Andrea, is that the jurors vote here, right? So the audience is going to be voting.
Yes, there's a panel of 12, correct? And then we have the audience as well. So there's two separate votes plus the judge's vote.
And do you know how many jurors there used to be in ancient Athens?
I'm going to guess 14.
500.
Really? There were 500 jurors?
Does anybody know why we had 500 jurors in ancient Athens?
Why?
Because it was unlikely that somebody would be able to bribe 500 people. So in ancient Athens, there were 500 jurors.
I did not know that.
You know, that doesn't say a lot.
No.
Yeah, exactly, right? So they were 500, 500 jurors, but we have 12 this year. I know Anna DeVlantis was a juror 1 year. I was a juror 1 year, and we always have a wonderful panel of local experts to be our jury.
We do. We have 12 jurors on stage. Dean Darby Dickerson, John Marshall Law School will be there, which is a reminder that student tickets are available, not just for law students, but for others. We'll have Dean Terry Weaver of the UIC College of Nursing coming as well, and a number of others to represent the field. And, of course, the entire audience gets to vote. We will allow every person to vote guilty or not guilty for Hippocrates, so you can be swayed by
these
really
gentlemen
on
the spot.
I love being in the audience,
and we'll put it right into a scale, and you'll see the scales tip, so you'll be able to influence the voting for our Dr. Hippocrates.
So does the moderator get to vote? I don't think I voted. Oh, no,
maybe
I did vote
year
last year.
Vote.
I think we should vote. Yeah, don't you?
I think we should.
At least we'll be one of the 500 plus voting from the audience. And Laura, how can people get tickets? Where can they go? And again, I highly encourage everybody to check this out. It's a lot of fun.
You can get tickets from the National Hellenic Museum website, or you can go to harristheaterchicago.org to buy tickets. This has been such a popular event. We've had to expand into larger and larger venues every year. So we're excited to be at the Harris Theater in Millennium Park this year, parking right on spot. So get your tickets now. It really will be a great event. But the box office at Harris Theater is a great way to get yourself there.
Well, excellent. Again, it's Wednesday, February 20th from 6:30 until 9 at the Harris Theater for Music and Dance. It's 205 East Randolph. Thank you so much for all
being here and for all the prep that you put into this.
Any final thoughts? I'm asking Bob and Tinos. Maybe I should not.
Hippocrates is guilty, and we're confident the jury's going to find him next week.
And come and join the excitement and watch justice prevail when Dr. Hippocrates walks out a free man.
Thank you all again for being here.
Thank you.
More after this on 720 WGN. Coming up after the news, we will talk to Bella Gandhi, the fairy godmother of dating. Valentine's Day is just a couple of days away. She has some great tips for you, whether you're married, single, or on the prowl. So that's coming up after 9. And after 9:30, we will talk to one of the heads of the Chicago Auto Show. The auto show is going on now. Don, have you been to the auto show yet?
I have not yet, no.
You have to go. They have this new souped-up car. It's supposed to be the fastest car. It's this Cobra S500.
Whoa.
Is what it's called by Ford. It is super cool. We're going to talk to our friends from the auto show about that after 9:30.
Anything with a snake name seems very drivable.
Right? I know. And there's a whole section of Corvettes. I don't know if that's your thing or not.
Yeah. I always like the look of a good Corvette. The body on those is really, really nice.
These vintage Corvettes are awesome. Ashley Byhan is producing for us tonight. Are you going to the auto show, Ashley? Thumbs up, thumbs down?
Oh, definitely. I'm going.
You have to. It is so cool. I want to see you because you're tiny and petite and adorable. You can fit in the smallest concept car I've ever seen. It's pink. And you know those teeny tiny... Don, what are those real small cars? Not the Mini Coupes, but they're just... They have them in Europe a lot. The one-seaters?
The smart cars?
Yeah. This is small. This is like almost a big wheel. It's so small.
Exactly what you're talking about.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
I tried to fit in there. I couldn't get my left leg into it, but it was fun. I know. Right? What I don't do for TV, right?
Right?
What I don't do for the team.
It's responsible.
So Bella's coming up after the news. We'll find out if you guys celebrate Valentine's Day, what you're planning to do as well. Maybe give some prizes away as well. But right now it's time for the news. Hear the sounds that matter. The top 5 at 5 from the Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis. Weekday afternoons on 720 WGN Chicago. Smart speaker users just say play WGN Radio. News is sponsored by Permaseal Basement Systems, and here's Don.
L is for the way you look at me. O is for the only one I see. V is very, very extraordinary. E is even more than anyone that you adore can love.
910 720 WGN. Thank you, Ashley. That's Ashley. Ashley Byhan is our executive producer tonight on the program. Of course, we're playing it L-O-V-E Love because the fairy godmother of dating, my good friend Bella Gandhi, is in studio. Like that title?
I love
Who
it.
Who gave you that
I'm
title?
Beaming.
Didn't Chicago Magazine give you that title?
It was a writer at the Huffington Post.
HuffPost.
And it just sucked. It went a little viral.
You are the fairy godmother of dating, the founder and president of Smart Dating Academy, and you hosted a show last week with John Duffy, which you sounded fantastic.
Oh, it was super fun. I'm happy to be here with my favorite person, Andrea Darlis.
Oh, I love you, Belle. So Valentine's Day is coming up. Do you celebrate Valentine's Day?
Kind of. I'm usually working some sort of thing.
An event.
Now that I have a dating business. So yeah, it's not usually a night off. So we might do the 15th. I'll be landing from New York. But I did say I'd like to have Mexican food on Valentine's
Day. On Valentine's Day.
Yes. Be specific about what you want.
Homemade, or is this you go to a restaurant?
Homemade.
Oh, good for you.
With grapefruit margaritas.
Fantastic. And your husband, Andy, is a wonderful guy. Does he make this for you, or do you cook?
It'll actually be our sitter who's going to cook.
Okay.
Who's a great cook. Shout out to Deb.
That's awesome.
I just specify the menu.
I find, at least just from observing, I think more people celebrate Valentine's Day now. And I am not one of I love Valentine's Day. I think it's great. I celebrate it. I think it's awesome. And people who are like, oh, it's a Hallmark holiday. It's just an excuse. I love it. Do you love Valentine's Day?
I love Valentine's Day. I think it just celebrates love, and it doesn't have to be romantic love. It can be any kind of love. And I mean, look, kids give each other cards. They give their teachers cards. You know, here's a statistic. The National Retail Federation said that Americans spend between $18 and $19 billion for Valentine's Day. We've spent an average of about $150 per person in this country. Only second to Christmas is Valentine's Day from a spend.
Really?
Yes.
See, so get
Am
out
I
there.
Am I stressing y'all out?
No, I think okay, this is just my thought, and you may agree or disagree, Bella, but I think if you have a special someone in your life, just something little, it doesn't have to be, you know, Tiffany, although it would be nice if it is.
Who doesn't love the blue box?
I love the blue box.
We all
I
love
do.
The
little
box.
White bow. I mean, who doesn't love that? But what do you think of someone who says, well, I leave a note or, you know, a little card? What are your thoughts on the little things?
I love that. I am a words of affirmation person, so I know I just waxed on about Mexican food. But I love thoughtful letters, thoughtful notes, thoughtful cards. For me, that's the holy grail. Better than, you know, just something that I don't really want. But if you're thinking about what should I get for, let's say it's your romantic partner, your husband, your wife, whomever, think about that person and think about what they would like and show them that you really know them and give them something thoughtful.
There you go. It's all about the thought.
It's about the thought.
What do you think of someone who just started dating, say maybe a month?
If you're going out on Valentine's Day, you had best acknowledge it. Don't blow it off. It will only get you points to do something small. Do not break the bank. I'm talking like $20-$25 max, okay? Like a book, right? Like,
right.
Yeah, something that you guys have talked about. You know, maybe a PS4 video game. Can you tell I'm the mother of an 11-year-old? Something, but something small that the person has mentioned that you think they would like, just to acknowledge it and be thoughtful.
How about for a couple who's been married, say, 25, 30 years?
Yeah, get it going. You better do something. Get that Tiffany box.
Okay, so yeah, so the longer you've been together, it should be a little more expensive.
Well, yeah. I mean, you should really, really know this person by now. So, you know, if she likes jewelry, by all means, give her something that she'll like. Because for a lot of people, jewelry equals sentimentality.
Right.
It's not so much I need the big whopping diamond, but even a pair of earrings that I could say, for example, oh my gosh, Andrea gave these to me. I love them. And I'll always think of you with that. So think about the person.
You know, you gave me, for one of my big birthdays, we'll call it 30, you gave me the most beautiful bracelet, and it was silver with a little black onyx type stone on the top. Every time I wear that, I think of you.
Wow.
And I do. And if I'm going to a speaking event or something, I wear it. I was just going to say, not for luck that you need luck at a speaking event, but just, you know, to give you a little positiveness and a little confidence.
A little zhuzh.
Yeah. So I always think of you every time I wear that.
Yeah.
So
hey,
thank you, Bella.
Something, you know, just something thoughtful, right? And look, she always thinks of me. 3 points.
See? There you
Love
go.
It.
Is there a scale? 3 points, 4 points, 5 points?
3 points, like a layup, right?
Okay, good. So that's
not
the big
layup.
One.
Can you tell we've been talking basketball and I'm fairly ignorant about it?
You know, our friend Pete McMurray, who I just love and adore, and you love Pete.
I love Pete.
Pete and I were working together last Friday night and we were talking about this, and he said that he is the gift giver. And in fact, we were texting today, so I know what he's getting his wife something. So if Mrs. McMurray is listening, he's getting you something. But he said that his wife does not. And people were calling in, and a lot of the guys were saying, yeah, you know, I buy for my wife, but my wife doesn't buy for me. I think it should be, you know, whether it's your husband or your wife or your girlfriend or your boyfriend or girlfriend, boyfriend.
Exactly.
I think everybody involved should participate, don't you?
Yes. Reciprocate, right? You're partners at the end of the day, whatever your relationship is. So do something nice for each other. And if you buy something for the person and they don't buy anything for you, because maybe you're listening to the show going, okay, I'm going to really take this advice and go out and do it, don't be upset if you don't get something back, because maybe they didn't hear our chat tonight. And remember, give for the sake of giving.
Bella, you're getting a text already from the 312, someone saying they're going on their first date on Valentine's Day.
I love you, whoever you are.
Isn't
from
that cool?
312.
Right.
That's awesome.
312. No, I won't give their number. But that's cool too, right? That's good. That's good.
It's so cool. Why not, right? It's just a day at the end of the day, right? You can, you know, I don't think you probably need to buy a gift, you know, but maybe you can say, let's just commemorate this by, you know, getting a heart-shaped pizza or something like that.
Oh, I love the heart-shaped pizzas.
I love heart-shaped pizzas. A lot of pizza places have them.
Yeah.
Or you can go to Costco or any store and buy a pizza, and I cut it into the shape of the pizza every year when I'm home.
And that's it. I'm going to do that.
Easy.
I think that's a great idea.
Totally. And then you can save the other parts and just make them into breadsticks.
Oh,
done it all.
See, you got it
all.
Don't
waste the pizza.
You are the best. We're talking to Bella Gandhi from Smart Dating Academy, president and founder. Bella, for those who don't know your backstory, you have always been someone just kind of like a matchmaker. I mean, I've known you since college. You were always kind of the one who'd say, you know, he'd get along with her, she'd get along with him, or whoever it might be. And you've always just kind of done this. So this has kind of been your destiny to do something like this.
I feel really grateful and lucky every day to have turned my passion and what I think we all have gifts, right? That we're like something that we're just good at naturally, and this is mine, and I've been doing it. I started the company almost 10 years ago, believe it or not. And what we do is I took the matchmaking part, but then now enter the internet, right? And there's so many ways to actually find matches that what we actually do is help people to navigate all of these potentially confusing options. Like, how do you use dating apps? Which one? How do you do it? Is this a good person? Is this not a good person for you? How do you meet people in real life? How do you get set up? So we take all of those confusing options that sometimes paralyze people and pare it down to something really simple so that you start to feel good, you feel safe, and you have fun.
I think it's wonderful. I think it's great. And I love your success stories, too. You've been to how many? Do you know how many weddings you've been to?
Dozens. Yeah. My husband's put the kibosh a little bit on all the weddings that I wanted to fly to. You know,
oh, no.
This summer, we're already invited to a wedding in Napa. And so he's like, okay, maybe some of the local ones we can go to. But
sure.
I love going to the weddings. There's nothing better than watching two people that love each other, like, commit to that.
Do you know early on with some of your clients when they meet that you're like, oh, they are going to get married? Can you tell early on still?
You know, between 3 and 6 months, I can't tell right away because you never know. Sometimes you get the wolf in sheep's clothing, right? And people their best foot forward, but underneath it, then the mask starts to come off and then you see the cracks in the armor. But between 3 and 6 months after people are exclusive and they're dating and they tell me, you know, the one word that I hear from people that tells me this relationship is going, it's going north. Do you know what that word is?
I do. You told me.
I did. It's easy.
Easy.
Easy. Easy is the most important thing and the most important kind of piece of data that I found from all of my clients, thousands of them over the last 10 years. When a relationship is easy, I'm like, okay, that's it. Now think about if you're sitting there and maybe you're driving or you're just kind of at home listening, close your eyes and think about easy. Easy doesn't mean no conflict. Easy means we have conflict, but we can resolve it easily. Nobody's throwing spatulas at each other. We can sit down. We can each process in our own way and come back to it, resolve it, talk about it like adults, and bring the relationship to a better level post-conflict.
Right. It's natural. And truly, you are marrying your best friend, your other half. You have to have, and you said this many times too, Bella, you have to have things in common. This whole opposites attract thing, that doesn't really fly, especially as you get older.
No, it can create a lot of chemistry in the beginning. So there is a lot of attraction. You're exactly right. And it can be great, but give it 3 to 4 months and that chemistry just, it melts down into friction. Because ultimately, if you've got two hyper alpha, high voltage, controlling people, it's amazing for the first 3 to 4 months. You're like, oh my God, this is amazing. And then after a while, you can't have two people grabbing the steering wheel all the time.
Right.
Right?
Absolutely.
And it doesn't mean that one person's always going to be the driver and the other one's always going to be the passenger, but it's two people that can trade off and be comfortable in both roles.
Absolutely. We're talking to Bella Gandhi, the president and founder of Smart Dating Academy. It's 9:19. We'll take a quick break and come back and have a couple of suggestions of what you can do for Valentine's Day. More after this on 720 WGN. WGN, just ahead of the news, we are talking with Bella Gandhi from the president and founder of Smart Dating Academy about Valentine's Day. And Bella, have something set up, right, for Valentine's Day. Let's give some little advice to people what they could do for Valentine's Day, either if they have something planned or maybe they're just thinking about it now, last minute Lucy's.
You know what? Plan something fun. There's a lot of research that shows if you're part of a couple, plan something new, do something new, a little adventurous, because that can kind of re-spark that attraction. Don't go to the same place that you go every week and get kind of lazy, sloppy, even though it's comfortable and there's nothing wrong with the neighborhood gem that's 10 steps from your house. We're all like that. I know. We're so guilty of it in our own house.
Right.
But plan something new. And it feels good. It feels a little exciting. Maybe plan a dance lesson. Go to Groupon. Find something. Like, there's tons of things that you could do just to make it a little bit special. Zhuzh it up a little bit.
That's a fun idea. These are really, really fun ideas. How do you keep it fresh after, say, 20 years, 25 years?
You just know that fresh changes, ultimately. It's never going to be like it was in the first month or two or three, because sometimes you trade a lot of those crazy, in love, exciting feelings for that amazing feeling of safety and comfort. So love changes, but you can always keep it exciting.
How much fun are you having? You're on Steve Harvey. You're on the Today Show. I see you on Good Morning America, jetting all over the country. How much fun are you having?
I love it. It's so fun. I love being able to think about different ways to help people and constantly challenging kind of, oh my gosh, how are we going to think about that? In fact, I'm flying out tomorrow to New York, weather impending, to do 2 days on Good Morning America.
Oh, fantastic.
On Wednesday, Thursday. So if you're watching,
so tune in.
Tune in to ABC between 8 and 9 a.m. And if I'm not there, it's because the ice storms in Chicago or New York are. I've already had one flight cancellation.
Oh,
so.
No.
But we're talking about
what are your topics?
Set people up. Like, if you've got a single friend, how do you set up that single friend? So that's the topic. So it's actually a really fun two-day segment. One of the producers that I work with, one of her best friends is single, and she's 27 and adorable and fun and smart, great job, and they can't figure out why she's not meeting the right people. So we've picked 5 different guys for her to go on a speed date with, and the speed dates are going to be 15 minutes, and then her 3 best friends and me, I'm going to give them advice on what to look for, and then we're all going to vote on who she should actually go out on a date with on Valentine's Day.
That is so cool.
It's so
fun. Do you pick the people?
Yes, we've picked the 5 people.
Okay, and did you have to look at their backgrounds? Did you try and see if they're compatible?
We tried as much as you can in 48 hours of trying to produce this and find someone, but these are 5 cute guys that are all, like, she's 27, so they're 27 to 33 years old. They all live right in the vicinity, right in New York City or around. So yeah, you know, they're diverse. It's amazing. They all have great jobs. They're super cute. I'm like, cute, awesome. Oh my gosh, love this. So yeah, it's
that's going to be so cool.
It'll be fun.
I hope she finds her match, and that'll be on she'll go on the date on Valentine's Day.
She'll go out on the date on Valentine's Day. So if you're listening, say a prayer to the universe that I can make it there.
you will absolutely be there. We'll be watching for you. I have to ask you, where is the craziest person someone has met? Someone.
Oh, that's a good question.
And I didn't mean to put you on the spot. I was just curious. Or I know you have so many fun, great stories, so many great success stories. But of course, not every date is a hit. That's how obviously we meet people and we meet the one. So you have some very funny stories about, you know, couples that didn't quite work out and for various reasons.
I've had people meet and they're now living together and they met on the red line. So don't ignore the L.
There you go. That's interesting.
The red line. Right?
So the L could be.
There's love on the red line.
Have you seen, there's a Facebook page called the People of the CTA?
No.
Oh, it's hilarious.
Is it like misconnections?
It is. Yeah, it's misconnections and then people who have been like, hey, someone left a phone number. I guess someone put their phone number on a piece of paper and then someone found it. It's just interesting stories. But then you also get, you know, people doing things that they maybe shouldn't be doing on the L as well. I'm surprised Facebook hasn't shut the page down. But so that's interesting. On the L.
Oh, yeah. I've had a client had a contractor walk in and, you know, and he was there to rebuild parts of her house and they're now married. So there's crazy stories.
How
like
cool.
You never know. A client of mine is a Jewish female doctor in New York City, and her sister sent an email out to 25 of her closest friends saying, who can produce a good Jewish guy for me, for my little sister? She got one response to that email, and my client, Hallie, married the guy that the person responded with.
No.
Yes.
What's the fastest turnaround from somebody meeting somebody to knowing they're the one and then getting married? Or maybe saying, hey, we're in this committed relationship.
My client, Jill, met a guy at a Super Bowl party. And they, you know, she said, he's absolutely not my type, but he's everything that you taught me I should be looking for in a good partner. I think this is going to work. So they had the conversation. About 2 months in, they became exclusive. And he said to her, listen, I know she was 39 years old and she says, I do want to get married and I want to have a family. He said, don't bring it up again. If we are going strong at 6 months, you will have a ring. Guess what happened? 6 months from the day that they became exclusive, she got her ring.
No.
I got a text at 11:30 at night and you would have thought I got engaged. I'm so excited.
That is so cool. Bella, where can people find you? I know GMA on Wednesday and Thursday.
Yes. On Good Morning America.
Okay,
and,
good.
Smart Dating Academy. Follow us on Instagram. We're doing a lot on Insta. Tips, tricks, motivation, inspiration. Or check out our website. There's a lot of good free information up there. We've got a book called The Four Commandments of Online Dating. It's free to download. So lots of good stuff that can really give you that motivation and inspiration to say, you know what? This is the year that I could get out there and find the other half.
Absolutely. And just to have you in someone's life is a blessing. So, aww,
thank you.
I love seeing you, Belle.
Ditto.
I will see you later in the week, and we'll see you on GMA. And check out WGNRadio.com and listen to Bella's podcast with Dr. John Duff. You guys killed it. So, aww, congratulations.
Thanks.
Talk to you soon. Happy Valentine's Day.
Happy Valentine's Day to you and everybody.
More after this on 720 WGN. Thank you, Don. It's 720 WGN. If you haven't been to the Chicago Auto Show yet, it just opened a couple of days ago. You absolutely have to get there. I was there on Saturday for the weekend break, and we had so much fun. We saw some concept cars, got to take a few test drives on that in the Land Rover on the track. So we wanted to have Mark Bielak, who's the Senior Communications Director for the Auto Show, pop on with us and tell us a little bit about what we can expect to see this year. Hi, Mark.
Hey, good evening. We're just wrapping up the third day of the show here, so still got a lot of days left.
There were so many cool things I saw. I know I just touched on a couple of different things that I saw, but I love this section with the old police cars, Mark. That was really kind of a neat twist this year.
Yeah, you know, we try to blend a little bit old in there with the new, and that, you know, fosters that love affair for the car, and that, you know, people can reminisce about what they used to drive, but then they can go and look at what they can drive.
Concept cars are really big, too. There's a very small Toyota pink car that I think I got my left foot in. Is that just for show, or is that really going to be drivable?
You know what? Toyota's brought that car a couple times now. It's really a concept personal transportation. You know, it's basically designed for one person to get around in the city. It's not, It's not anything that they're going to build anytime soon, but it's just Toyota's thinking about what they might do, and that's what concept cars are all about. Or they're thinking, they're trialing ideas. And we've got a couple of cool concept cars this year. I mean, we've got this really cool Infiniti. It looks like a race car. It's neat. It's called the Prototype 10. And then we've also got a couple of other Jeep concept cars and some Kia Telluride cars from SEMA. There are some really interesting, you know, dream only. In fact, there's a Nissan Kicks that's outfitted with speakers and a DJ booth in the back, and they're using it to actually perform in their booth. So there's a DJ that's on that thing going all the time, and we can hear it all the way up here in the media center sometimes.
Mark, talk about some of the, it's so interactive, which I love. I was talking about the Land Rover, which you just kept going up, 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 and he said it's the best view from the auto show. But there's so many different tracks on there, Ford, Mazda, Subaru, they all have outdoor test driving opportunities too.
Right. So we've got four indoor tracks. And for anyone who hasn't been to the Chicago Auto Show, these are full-on driving opportunities where you get in the car with a professional driver, and they'll drive you. There's the Jeep track, which is celebrating its 15th year, the Ram truck territory, the Kia Chork track, and then this new Land Rover track that you're talking about. You can actually, you get in line, you get in the car, you go for a ride. And in Chicago, we don't have a whole lot of hills. So this is something that people may have never experienced in their life, is kind of off-road driving. And then we have six outdoor ride and drives. We've got Ford, Mazda, Subaru, Volkswagen, Volvo, and then an electric car drive. And in those cases, you actually get behind the wheel and drive the vehicle.
Oh, that's so much fun. And this year, you can vote for Best in Show on some of the kiosks that are on the show floor.
Right. So something that we've done in Chicago for more than a decade is let the people that come to our show pick their favorite vehicles, and then we award the manufacturers based on those categories: best all-new production car, best concept car, best green car, favorite exhibit, and then also the car that I'd most like to have in our driveway. And right now, the Bugatti Chiron is winning. That's a $3.5 million car that goes more than 260 miles an hour.
Wow. Mark, what car would you pick? Not for Best in Show, because I know you have to be neutral, but if they could give you the keys to any car right now, what would you drive off the floor?
You know what? I think I'd be a little bit more sensible. My favorite car here on the show floor is the Volkswagen Jetta GLI. That was the first car I had growing up, and introduced the new one here just 4 days ago at the Chicago Auto Show.
I love the Corvette section, too. I think I saw like a 1964 Corvette Stingray. Yellow. That was really cool.
Yeah, you know, we've got different clubs here. We mentioned that a little bit at the beginning. Windy City Corvettes is here. And so these people, you know, they take their cars and they drive them all summer, and then they park them in the winter in the garage. They store them. But we give a few clubs each year the opportunity to come to the show and to show off their cars to the attendees of the auto show.
Well, it's wonderful. How can people? It runs through the 18th, but you can get some online information, and there are apps now you can download too and get discounted tickets.
Right. So if you download our app, either on the Android or iOS, you get a $3 discount off an adult ticket. But people can find out all sorts of information about the show from that app as well. But then they can also go to ChicagoAutoShow.com.
Get out and see it, Mark. Thank you so much.
All right, thank you.
That is the great Mark Bielak, the Senior Director of Communications for the Chicago Auto Show, going on at McCormick Place right now. Get on out and check it out. Test drive some of those cars. It's really, really cool. We'll have more after this on 720 WGN, and I promise you're going to learn about all childish things next on 720. WGN 948 on the program. I'm Andrea Darlis. Patty Vasquez is coming up at 10 o'clock. And I promised you, I've said several times tonight, we're going to tell you all about All Childish Things. It's the first Folio Theater's production of this hilarious contemporary comedy heist, running from January 23rd through February 24th, so just about two more weeks. It's All Childish Things, and we have two of the stars of this play, Alberto Mendoza and Bobby Richards, in studio. Hey, guys.
Hey, what's going on?
Thank you for being here and hanging out with us.
Thanks for calling us stars.
Thank you. Guys are stars. You're Chicago area stars.
I love
now.
It.
You got to get used to it.
I know, right?
You got your paparazzi. You got people traveling with you now, your handlers.
It's true.
So, tell us about the play.
Well, I'll take that one.
All right.
So the show is, like you said, it's a comedy heist. It's a lot of fun. It's about a group of best friends from high school. Some years have passed. They might be in their mid-30s. One of them might live in their mother's basement, and that's probably where the play takes place. And they're deciding that they want to turn their lives around, so they decide they're going to rob the Kenner Toy Factory, where all of the original Star Wars toys are, and sell them to a anonymous buyer for $2 million.
Are they selling the packaging?
Everything. Oh, yeah. Okay. These are like mint condition things, you know, collectors go crazy for.
This is what caught my eye. I was the big, and this is, I think, why this play, or why this, I don't want to say it's a musical, why this play kind of spans generations, because I had Star Wars toys as kids, and I'm sure you guys did too.
Oh, I was
too.
Upset. But I still have Star Wars
but
toys.
I played with them. I took them out of the box, and
you
I
fool.
Had... Oh, do you want to laugh? Guess whose mom sold her Millennium Falcon in a garage sale? It was the
Seriously?
Big kind. Yeah, she did.
Man.
Yeah, yeah.
Well,
for like $2.
And you look at all that stuff on eBay now, and it just like... You're like, oh, my retirement.
Yeah,
you know,
right?
Like...
And gone.
Exactly, yeah.
But I feel like when I was a kid, it was the second... Or like when we were kids, it was like the second wave was coming through.
Yeah.
The prequels were coming out, so they were re-releasing original figures. I would buy ones to open and play with, and then I would buy one to keep in a box.
Did you really?
Was,
so you
I
knew?
I was that crazy.
Do you still have...
I have some of them, but it's like...
Them?
But I don't know what the value
but
is.
But probably some of the little guns are missing.
Yeah.
Or,
but know. I got a kid now, so he's almost at the age where he could probably play with them. So I'm debating on that back and forth of like, do I let you trash my childhood?
One for you, one for daddy.
Exactly. One for you, one for daddy.
Oh, and it's so cool, though. But but I think this is something everyone can relate to.
Oh, yeah.
Boys, girls, men, women. You know, this is something fun. Everyone loves toys, and especially Star Wars toys.
Oh, yeah.
Talk a little bit about First Folio. I mean, I know you guys, you're in your 23rd season, one of Chicago's greatest, I want to say, you know, off-Broadway or smaller theater companies. But have you guys worked together before?
We haven't had the chance to work together
before.
We
haven't, we haven't played together, but we have found out over the process that we have so many mutual friends.
Yeah.
Isn't it wild?
It's all
small
like,
community.
Yeah, totally comes together. And it's the same with all of us in the show, but like with First Folio, you're totally right. It's like, it's an equity theater.
Right. Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, it's one of the mainstays out in the Western Burbs. And people from, like I was saying, like from the Burbs and from the city go out there for their Summer Shakespeare Festival, for their, you know, for their multiple seasons where they're doing classics, they're doing contemporary shows. And this kind of show is, it's not quite outside what they usually do, but it is kind of fun that it's this sort of like, this contemporary comedy about Star Wars, you know, Star Wars
elaborate
nerds.
Silliness.
Yeah,
which
I super goofy,
love.
Super fun.
Yep.
And like you were saying too, it's like you don't have to know Star Wars to love the show.
Right.
It's anything. If you obsess about something, you're totally going to relate to it.
You touched on something I think is really true, that the Chicago theater community is very close. Like while you guys haven't worked together now, but you know a lot of people who do. Yeah. Have you experienced that too, kind of going through your careers as actors, that our community is very tight knit?
Absolutely. You know, with every show that I do, I tend to find, like, from the cast, just more and more people where I'm kicking myself that I hadn't met them sooner.
Oh,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it, you know, we just pick things up just right away, and it that kind of camaraderie it is great to see how it just kind of extends to just people that, you know, you didn't know before, but you definitely will want to work with them, you know, soon again. And I love it for that.
We're talking to Alberto Mendoza and Bobby Richards, two of the stars of All Childish Things at the First Folio Theater. Runs through February 24th. Are you guys both from Chicago?
Not originally. I grew up just outside Orlando.
Okay. Oh, nice.
That
wait,
weird.
Let me look outside.
Yeah.
Right? Right?
No, that weird migration.
I tell that every day. I'm like, so do you check the temp back in Orlando?
Yeah.
How about you, Bobby?
I'm just from outside Indianapolis. So
okay.
Not
Midwestern.
That far. I'm used to this.
Midwestern, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Was it a bit of a shock, your first Chicago winter?
Oh, yeah. I call family just, you know, so they can describe the sun to me.
Of course.
Like, remind me what that was like.
Right? That. I hate that when someone I went to Cabo last week, and I had planned this trip, like, you know, 2 months ago, and I didn't know it was going to be during the polar vortex, and I thought, I am not going to take my life into my hands and post anything that I'm anywhere other than
you're going to lose a lot of friends.
Exactly,
yeah.
Right? Exactly. But you know what? Do you find, too, kind of going back to the, you know, the strong camaraderie here, do you find that people will go to the theater if it's pouring rain or an ice storm or if it's sunny?
Here's the thing that was crazy. So on Sunday when we just got that random like whiteout for, you know, however long, like an hour, 30 minutes, something like that, I was set that I totally thought, oh man, this is going to totally, you know, people aren't going to come to the show. Because
there's going
to
be more people in the cast than in the audience, as we thought.
Sold out.
Sold out that show.
Like,
that's awesome.
And so it was such a fun crowd. And that's the great thing is that, you know, the cold hasn't detracted from people coming out, you know, the weather. But I also think, too, that Chicago, you know, that's like,
Oh,
it's negative 30. I'm going out.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. When I used to live in the South Suburbs, when I first moved to Wrigleyville, Lincoln Park area, it was just a giant blizzard. Everybody's in the middle of the streets. The plows hadn't even come down because it was a side street. And everyone's just throwing snowballs and whatnot in the front. So, yeah, I mean, we enjoy it. You're one of us now, so we have to claim
you. I am. I go back, you know, to Orlando for the holidays, and everybody's got their winter coats on for 40-degree weather.
Right.
And I've got, you know, just my hoodie and shorts on. It's great.
Oh, yeah. That's like when I go out to L.A., and it's like, you know, 62, and everyone's bundled up, and I'm like, you're insane.
Yep. You're
crazy. I know. Seriously. Yeah, same thing. We had a sports reporter who moved to San Diego, and he said the same thing, only their temperature gauge was when it got to be 50.
Oh,
he said,
okay.
That's when they shut down?
It's freezing. They shut down the city. Exactly right. It's Alberto Mendoza and Bobby Richards from the First Folio Theater's All Childish Things. When people come to see this, what do you want them to take away? What do you want them to go home feeling?
Oh, gosh. Hopefully pains in their stomach from laughing so hard.
Good.
That's what I'm hoping.
Nice.
Yeah. And I think, too, like just sort of, at least people have told me, too, when they leave, that sort of an understanding of like, oh, you know, like, stuff might hit the fan, but you know, but it that kind of stuff will sort of build friendships up and make people, you know, sort of their relationship stronger. So that's something too. A little bit of inspiration.
Oh, yeah. In the byline it says, "Will divided loyalties and greed lead their friendship to implode like the Death Star, or will the Force be with them?" So kind of art imitating life a little bit.
I know. Yeah. Oh yeah. It's
right. Bit. Modern day.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
So go see it and take some life's lessons from this.
Lots of life lessons will be learned at All Childish Things.
Yeah.
Favorite Star Wars toy that you guys have or still have?
Oh, I would say mine was just the case that I had all of the little figurines in. It was the C-3PO.
Oh, I had C-3PO too.
There it is.
I had the Darth Vader one too. Yep. You laugh. I'm going to send you a picture.
Oh. I had a Millennium Falcon.
Yeah. Did your mom sell yours?
No, but I did. I did. I sold it.
How dare you?
When I was when I was just a few years after I got it going like, oh no, I'm too cool. And then like I sold it and I go, I'm not too cool. Why did I sell it?
You better apologize to your son.
Oh, I know, right? Yeah. I know. I'm going to have to buy it again when he totally gets into this. But like, yeah, I think my favorite toy was, there's a character named Boba Fett and it was just a little
Boba Fett
figure.
He's blue. Love him.
He's got
multicolored mask.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Is he your favorite character?
I don't know if he's my favorite character, but because he's not really in the movies that much.
No, he's not.
Yeah, but I don't. But there's like this mystery about that character. Yep. He factors into the show.
He really does.
It's also. I mean, yeah, it's full circle. My love for him and the love for all of our characters for him in the show.
Well, you guys are so much fun. Where can people find out about the play and get tickets?
They can go to firstfolio.org. And just navigate the site. I mean, they've got it designed so it's like boom, right when you get on firstfolio.org, you can get tickets.
Yep.
Right.
And of course you can
all
call
in information.
But go ahead to firstfolio.org, you can find the phone number there in case you want to call.
And support our local theater. It's
absolutely
awesome. First Folio Theater, Alberto Mendoza and Bobby Richards and All Childish Things runs through February 24th. Thanks you guys.
Thanks
for having us. This is great.
Patty's up next, 720 WGN.